Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerf Right Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 249 of Nerd Pride Radio. 249 kilograms is about the weight of an average adult domestic pig. I learned that from a website called bluebulbprojects.com, specifically their project called The Measure of Things. And in addition to giving me that stat, it also added on the following bit of trivia. It said the titular character, Babe the Pig, in the 1995 family film Babe, was played by 48 different American Yorkshire piglets. 48! Because of the length of filming and the rate at which piglets reach adulthood. Sweet! I totally learned something today. Yeah, apparently, modern hogs, pigs, domestically raised for agriculture, we can get those suckers from, you know, birth to market weight in 3 months in some cases. It depends on the pig and the genetic strain you're using, sometimes as long as 6 months. But that means those little suckers grew fast. And so, each one probably had maybe a week or two on set before it was finally too big to be used anymore. How cool. That was very interesting. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Come on. Ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comic nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening. I'm just awesome, Lisa. Thank you. Your timing is getting better and better. Oh, I've chewed her out in the past because she jumps in too early. So now, that's what I get. All right. So, this is the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, we're recording live from our Nerd Pride studios in Castle Grayskull. So, first off, Mike was wrong! You know, earlier, when I said I was awesome, yeah, I was wrong. I'm actually not awesome. I'm still pretty sick. And now, for those of you who are concerned, because I was sick for a long time last year, yeah, I'm also kind of concerned because I don't want to do this every year. But what I do have is viral bronchitis. I have had it for, as of today, 2 weeks and 3 days. My doctor, and I've gone to see the doctor, and I've gotten an inhaler and some really good medicines, and not just your wimpy albuterol inhaler. No, I got the steroid inhaler that's jacking up my lungs, and so that feels pretty good. But I have seen the doctor, and the doctor says that this is a viral bronchitis that, from what they've been seeing so far, it's going to last 2 to 4 weeks. So they said 4 weeks is not unusual for this. So therefore, knowing me, yeah, I'm going to go right to 4, maybe even 5. And we'll see how it works out. But, fingers crossed it is not going to be like last year where it dragged out for months and months. But it might be. We'll see. But that also means that, you know, since I'm sick, I don't have the energy. I'm not thinking straight. And so therefore, this week is going to be an all Pod-O-Matic episode. That's right. Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, or, you know, the whole cast, whatever, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something, you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. I guess for whatever it's worth, by the way, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. The weekend's over now. We had an awesome Thanksgiving. We had all of our sons home with us, and it was really cool. And then we went out and saw my wife's family on the weekend, and that was also cool. And in general, we've just had a really relaxing, good time. I mean, you know, as relaxing as it can be when you're sick and you mostly just want to sleep all the time. But hey, we had several days to just sleep all the time, so that was cool. So anyway, here we are on the Podomatic, and the first number is 33. And just out of curiosity, okay, grand total, we have 121 in the hopper right now, plus however many Ronster has in the extra Ron bin, which I think is 100 and something still. Ooh, 102 still. So we've got a fair amount, but, you know, if any of you want to start counterbalancing Ron's overload here, start sending me stuff in. I haven't had any new Podomatics except for my wife sent me some just this last week. But other than that, I haven't had any new Podomatics for a while. So if you guys are interested, you know, jump on in. And if not, we got enough to last a little bit. So anyway, 33 comes from, oh, here it is. See, you would think while I was doing that whole spiel, I could have rolled down and found the number, but I'm not that good. This one is from Kyle. Kyle says, assume you have the ability to time travel, which, by the way, time is spelled with a T-H, so T-H-Y-M-E. I can time travel, meaning you can instantly teleport yourself to within 2 feet of any time plant or spice. How do you put this power to use? Okay, first off, that means you can instantly teleport to virtually any house because, I mean, most kitchens have some time in them, I'm guessing. So, you know, that's pretty convenient. But I would also make a point of getting stocking up on time and maybe parsing it out into little smaller containers even. Yes, parsleying it out. Thank you, Lisa. And depositing those in all sorts of places that I want to visit on a regular basis. And, you know, maybe even, you know, scattering around a bit because, you know, you don't always want to have to appear in the kitchen, right? So, anyway. And then it's just a matter of using it as you would any other teleportation, which, you know, I saw the movie Jumper. Apparently you use it to rob banks and sit on top of pyramids. So that's all it takes. But, although, see, the problem with the pyramid is you would have to get some time to the top of the pyramid to start with and then make sure it stays there somehow. That's a little harder. I mean, like, how much time is needed to make this work? I mean, can it be just, you know, a single tiny piece? I mean, can it be just a couple of micrograms of it, or do I have to actually, you know what? It doesn't matter. Really doesn't matter. God, for the most part, it would just be a convenience for me. But then, now the problem with superpowers, I mean, with great power comes great responsibility. Do I feel obligated to use this for the betterment of humankind? Because I'm certain that assuming that I could avoid the whole I'm trapped in a government laboratory for the rest of my life being studied by government scientists, if I can avoid that fate and assume that I can live free and do whatever I want, choose my own profession, as it were. I mean, there's lots of things in this world that could be made better by someone who could instantly transport stuff from one place to another. I mean, that seems like the kind of thing. I mean, just imagine the business in transporting organs for transplant. I mean, good Lord. Every emergency room in the country would need to have some time in it. And then that way, I can show up at the ER wherever there's an organ that's ready. Boom. Instantly have it on site wherever they need it somewhere else. Man, I mean, that's an easy one. That's just the first thing that came to my head. I would feel like I would have to do something like that. Plus, you know, that's a service that you could make a reasonable living off of. I mean, I'm not saying be exorbitant. I'm not going to charge people, you know, huge amounts and make myself, you know, staggeringly wealthy off of transporting organs. But, you know, it is my time. And so like any other delivery person, you know, I'd want to make enough money to live comfortably on. I could do that and be doing a good service for humanity. So, I mean, that's a simple one. I'm sure there's lots of others that would come to mind if I thought of them. 90. 90 is from, oh, there it is. 90 is from Mrs. Darks. And Mrs. Darks says, this is probably more a Lisa question, But how did you guys deal with all the wonderful, yet way too bountiful artwork and other papers that your children produced at school and then brought home? Lisa instantly, without hesitation, she goes, you just throw them away when they're not looking. They don't notice. They're kids. They're not that bright. All right. I added the last part about them not being too bright. There's a few pieces that we do have. We have a cedar chest at home that we, the Hope chest. And so there's a few things that, valuable stuff that we want to save forever, things that have a particular meaning or whatever. And we've put those away to save, for whatever. But most of them, yeah, look, they go up on the fridge, they go up at work. But eventually at some point, you know, when they're not looking, just off it goes into recycling and they won't this. But see, also Lisa has this doubly compounded because she's here at school as a teacher and kids bring her stuff all the time that they want her to have. All right. Just even whether it's a picture that they've done, sometimes it's a picture of her and it says sweet things. And there's lots of stuff that she does save as kind of a, she has a mental health folder where she puts all sorts of, stuff she's gotten from kids or from parents through the years that remind her that, you know, when times get hard, remind her that, yeah, you know what, she's doing this job for a reason. And there's lots of rewards that come from it, even when sometimes things are a little stressful or whatever, or a lot stressful. But yeah, the vast bulk of it, you can't save everything. So most of it, yeah, you just wait till they're not looking. And they've never once complained. I've never once had them come up and go, Hey, where's that three-headed pumpkin monster picture I made for you guys? Wasn't that in here before? Is that not? No. See, no one ever complains about it. So. I can't even imagine that. Yeah. Lisa has a friend of hers, a teacher, who has saved, she's got four kids, and has saved every piece of artwork, every paper that all of her kids have ever done. And each one has their own giant tote up in the attic that is just filled with everything that they ever did. Like, man, that seems like a lot. I mean, you know, yes, I understand keeping some things for the memories and, you know, some things have special meaning, but boy, everything? Oh, that's harsh. I can't imagine it. 93. Hey, we're right there. This is from Kaz. Hey, Kaz. Kaz says, Lego time. What monument or piece of architecture would you want to see implemented in an official Lego kit? All right, first off, I don't care if it's in an official Lego kit because I do nanoblocks, and I really like the nanoblock sets that I have. I've shared pictures of them, but years ago, my kids started getting me nanoblock sets. Nanoblocks are just little mini Legos. They're Lego compatible, except they're teeny tiny. And so here's these little half-sized Lego blocks. And they build, I mean, my first one was the Eiffel Tower, but since then I've done the, statues of Easter Island. I've done the Colosseum, the Cathedral at Notre Dame, the Parthenon, the White House, I've probably got 15 or 16 of them now. And the kids will give me a new one, for birthday, Father's Day, Christmas. So, you know, I get two or three a year and I love doing these things. And, Nanoblocks was the first ones we ever saw doing it and we thought they were really, really awesome. And then after we saw Nanoblocks doing it and I was building them, then we saw Lego come out with their Lego architecture series and started coming in with the same sorts of things, except in Lego. And some of them look fairly identical to the Nanoblock set. Some of them are more detailed and, look cleaner and prettier. Some of them actually, not as nice. It just depends on the set. And then there's a bunch of knockoff companies now that are doing the same sort of things, but we just like the Nanoblocks. I've got a thing for them. That's what I started with. So all the ones I have on my shelf at work are all Nanoblock. And so I like continuing that one, but your question was, what piece of architecture would I like to see done in this sort of style? And what monument or piece of architecture? That is really hard because all the ones that I've really been excited about, you know, are already there. The Arc de Triomphe is the one we're working on right now. That's one that I've been wanting for a long time. But, I mean, like the Sydney Opera House, Big Ben, there's all sorts of cool ones in there. I cannot imagine one that is not already implemented somewhere. So, wow. Gosh, I don't even know which one I want next, for that matter. So, I think, oh, maybe London Bridge next? Maybe, I don't know. All I know is I really enjoy doing sets like that, and I've got a whole bunch of them that I really, really enjoy, that I've had a lot of fun putting together. So I wouldn't mind one of these days doing one of the really large ones. The, Nanoblock has, for example, Castle Neuschwanstein, which is the German castle that Cinderella's castle is based on, and thus the centerpiece of Disneyland is based on that same castle. And I've got the small version of that one that I really like, but they make a much larger one, and I think the larger one would take probably days to put together. But it would be a lot of fun, but I can't, you know, even as a gift, I can't justify spending $350 on a Nanoblock set. All these other little ones, you know, they're like anywhere from, we've paid, you know, $11 to $25 for them over the years for a set. That's not bad. When you're paying like $14-$15 a set on average, that's really nice. That's, you know, and for the 2 or 3 hours of entertainment I get out of it, or now me and Noah, we tend to put them together together. Yeah, no, that was correct. I can't imagine spending, you know, $200, $300, $400 on one of these sets. But I mean, I think it would be cool to do it, but I wouldn't want anyone to spend that kind of money. That's just silly. But anyway, 28. Let's see. I don't think I've ever had a grammatically correct sentence that repeated the word together before. That's a first for me. 28 is from Kyle. Kyle says, superhero death match. Eliahad versus Hulk. Assume Eliahad being my friend Dave. Assume that this is a gladiator arena, and that Eliahad has his cello. Also assume that it's dumb Hulk. What happens? Okay. Obviously, we've all heard, you know, music hath charms to soothe the savage beast, or savage breast, as it were. And so you would think that this would be a simple thing, that, you know, Hulk is going to come out raging, and then Eliahad will simply start playing the cello, and ultimately, Hulk is going to be, you know, you're getting ahead of me, Lisa. Just hold on. She's over there miming the results of this match. You would expect then that Hulk is going to get a little sleepy, somewhat hypnotized, fascinated, if you want to use the Bard effect for it, and that he would then fall asleep, and then, you know, Eliahad would just sneak away, I suppose, because there's no defeating Hulk. It's not like you're going to kill him, but, you know, you could at least get out of there with your life. But that is not what's going to happen, because we've seen Hulk in the gladiator arena, dumb Hulk in the gladiator arena. You saw Thor Ragnarok. You saw what he does, all right? So it is literally, you remember when he grabbed Loki and he slapped him back and forth on the ground, up in the Stark Tower, the first time they met, and then said, puny god, and then threw him in. You remember that piece? All right. It would be like that with Eliahad, except it would involve lots of blood and brains and cello splinters. It would not be pretty. I mean, I love you, Dave, but, do not go up against Hulk. I'm begging you. It's foolish, man. 94 is, there it is, it's from Kaz again. And that Kaz says, when is Kyle going to tire of dominating the Potomatics? Oh, yeah, well, now, because Ron dominates. I mean, you know, Kyle's not bad, but Ron's got him by a factor of like 5-1 at this point. Kyle is jealous. Kyle fumes and rages in the privacy of his own home. I mean, he puts on a good face for the rest of us. Oh, but he's seething. He's seething and roiling. He's plotting on how to bring down Ronster. But still, Kyle wants to maintain his image as a good guy. So he's going to make it look like an accident. All right. He's going to pull some kind of mind trick that's going to, play into Ron's hubris and force him to bring himself down. And then Kyle can dominate once again. But, it's kind of a long range plan. It's months in the implementation. You guys won't even realize it's happened until it's over. 00, number 100, is from Kyle, speak of the devil. And Kyle says, If you could eliminate the common usage of one common word in the English language that is not a slur or insult, what would it be? And you have to come up with one. Don't just give us that English is evolving and who am I? Okay, I know I've answered this question before. I know I have, and I'm sure I gave a really lame answer to it last time. So even though he says, I can't just be lame about this one, I'm going to be lame about this one and say, I already answered this. Look up the old podcast. 65. Haha, weaseled out of that one. 65 is from... It's from Kaz again. Wow, Kaz, for a guy who doesn't have a whole lot of entries in here, you are just ruling this week. We've watched Kyle eat disgusting things for YouTube hits. What's wrong with him? Nothing's wrong with him. Kyle is just... He's the guy at the D&D table who likes to do monologues. He enjoys having people watch him, and he enjoys being entertaining for others. And there is nothing wrong with that. I mean, you can call him a drama queen or say he has a problem with wanting to be the center of attention or whatever, but it's just a natural, it's a personality thing that he likes entertaining. And so therefore he knew this is something that would entertain, and so he did it. So, I mean, I don't know. Kyle is fun to be with. He is fun to hang out with. You cannot be bored around Kyle, because if you are, he will drop his pants. Swear to God. Watched him do it. If he thinks that you might be mad with him, the solution is he drops his pants. Because who's going to be mad at the guy with his pants around his ankles? Come on. That would be too pathetic. 21. 21 is... from Ronsters. Nice to hear from you, Ron. I thought you weren't going to show up this episode. Let's go with a well-intentioned distant relative has passed on, and in their will they have bequeathed to you a sum of money amounting to $7,777.77 on the condition that once a year on their birthday you have to dress as them and lay flowers on their grave. This clothing includes a large Stetson hat, Western-style button-up shirt with metal poppers instead of buttons, a large belt buckle and belt, jeans, and, of course, pointy-toed cowboy shoes. Do you accept? Goddamn right I accept. What, I got to dress up like a cowboy once a year and put flowers on their grave? I will do that. Yeah, I mean, like... Okay, distant relative, but how well did I know him? Did I like him? I mean, I might do that for free if they requested it. Like, once a year, show up at... You know what? Once a year, I would like all of my remaining relatives to show up dressed in cowboy outfits just to put flowers on my grave and say nice things about me. Okay, we'll do that. But you know what? For almost $8,000, I'm completely on board, man. This is easy. 92. You know, I think it was stuck, but we keep getting other... numbers before we go back to the 90s, but man, it's going to hit every 90 we've got, isn't it? This is 92, is from Kyle. Kyle says, assume that Aiden's been dating the same girl, let's call her Jessie, for the past year. He reveals to you that both he and Jessie are confident that she's the second coming of the Christian Savior. You have no information that either confirms or denies this, other than the fact that she's the nicest person you've ever met. Like Amish nice. What do you do? Wow. I stall for time. Because I have no idea. First, I play it off like it's a joke. Because I'm just assuming it's a joke. I just can't even imagine this situation that it's not a joke. But then... after that, wow. Yeah. How about assuming that Jessie is a happy, functioning, productive member of society, that she doesn't seem to have any mental issues or problems that are causing difficulties in her life or the lives of others, and assuming that my son is happy and content and he's okay with this, then, you know, I just let it go. I mean, that's, you know, that's not something that we necessarily need to even talk about. You know, if they want to start a church and start proselytizing and bringing in converts, I might have some concerns. But, I mean, if it's just that that's just a fact for her, I don't know. Man, can't even imagine it. I mean, I really can't imagine it. I mean, I'd assume she was crazy. I would just assume she was crazy, and I would wonder why Aiden was playing along with it. But you know, God, I wish he was here for this question. That would be really cool. Oh, man. But unfortunately, he had to work tonight. I messaged him before we started, and he said, nah, he's got to work all night. So, darn it. God, that would be really fun. So, but yeah, mostly avoid it. I mean, it depends on how long they're going to be together. I mean, is it, you know, oh, man. Rough stuff. So, all right. So my wife brings up a good point. Is it any better or worse than if they, after they've been dating a while and she fesses up and says that, it's only right that we should know that, you know, she's a vampire. And she truly believes she's a vampire, because there are people who do truly believe they're vampires. Is that better or worse? Is that, I don't know. It would be an awkward situation, to say the least. And, you know, if that's her reality, I'm not going to sit there and try and dissuade someone from that. That's between them and their therapist, I suppose. But, also, it's a little weird. 36 is, it's from Jacob. Hey, I just saw him. He's so cool. All right. Jacob says, what is the worst way to activate your really awesome superpower? Ah, all right. My superpowers, and they are amazing, superhuman for sure. But they are activated by Chemical X, which can only be ingested in the form of cigarettes. So therefore, I have to inhale Chemical X through my specially rolled cigarettes that contain it. That is the worst way to have to activate my awesome superpower. Well, I suppose there could be really embarrassing ways. You know, things that require you, stripping naked and shouting racial slurs in order to activate your power. I mean, which is only slightly sillier than having to yell Shazam all the time, I suppose. And by the way, the guy who got his powers from cigarettes, that was a real superhero way back. So I wasn't making that up. I mean, Underdog. God, Underdog got his powers by popping pills. That's, man, it looks kind of bad today. So anyway, there's lots of terrible ways, but I'm going to go with having to smoke cigarettes to do it. 41. Hey, it's from Ronster again. And Ron says, what is the worst non-corporal punishment you were ever given at school? Huh. The worst non-corporal punishment? I never got a whole lot of... I mean, like, I got detention once in junior high. We got sent to the principal's office to talk to... Well, it was actually the vice principal. We got sent to the office to talk to the vice principal when we threw snowballs at our friends from the overpass. So a talking to and a detention. I mean, that's really it. There was never a whole lot of real serious punishment for me. I was a relatively good kid in school. So, you know, not much. That's the answer. 10. 10 is also from Ronster. And Ron says, what do you need to do or accomplish in your life before you can say you have accomplished your life's purpose? Finish raising my kids. I mean, get all of my kids so that they are independent of us as their parents. As in, if something happened to us, they can get by and be perfectly fine, productive citizens on their own. That's really the most important thing. Everything else is gravy. I mean, if I, you know, if I write the great American novel, or if I publish Godball, if I, you know, get to take trips around the world with my wife after we retire, if I get to do, there's all sorts of things I could do that would be awesome. But it's raising my kids, to be good people is really about it. That's the important part. 87 is Kyle. And Kyle says, there it is. Describe the color purple to a blind person. Oh, how presumptuous of me. Wow. I don't really know how to describe colors to blind people. Someone who is synesthetic and can have synesthetic, is that the proper term for someone who has synesthesia? Anyway, someone who experiences colors as other senses could possibly describe this better than I could. But I don't know. Purple is sort of a, as far as colors go, sort of a round color. It's got kind of a fullness to it. It is, I don't know, it's deep and it's cool and, yeah, a little bit soft, smells of nighttime. Hard to say. It's very much a, the keys for me is when I think, purple, I'm thinking like plums and dusk, and these are the sensory associations that go with it for me. But you know, I mean, you could start off with plums and grapes. I mean, that's what purple tastes like, right? If you're going to have some purple drink or purple candy, that's what purple tastes like. So you could start from there, but that's the best I can do. 84. I can't believe we haven't had any duplicates so far. Hey, it's from Blue Devil. When was the last time we heard from Blue Devil? What is your favorite sport you've ever played? Probably the sport that I enjoy most, or have enjoyed most, as actual, I assume we're talking traditional physical sport activity, probably volleyball. I really like playing volleyball. It was a good time. But, you know, I don't mind any physical activity, sport, if it's, you know, as long as it's just a friendly game and it's not, you know, not serious organized competition, because I'm just not in the kind of shape for serious organized competition. But yeah, volleyball is probably the one I've had the most fun at, but I don't know. Wait. Mike was wrong. No, not volleyball. My wife just said, did you play dodgeball as a kid? I'm like, oh God, yeah. I love dodgeball. I know dodgeball is like the stereotypical, sport that bullies picking on weaker kids during dodgeball, and that apparently all the nerds hated dodgeball because they just kept getting beamed in the face. I loved dodgeball as a kid. I loved playing dodgeball anytime, especially free-for-all dodgeball. It was great. But, and also, I've never played it, but, Gaga Ball, I've watched it played a bunch, at scout camp. It is 16-foot round, corral, essentially. And you get inside, and inside this 16-foot circular fence is the Gaga pit, and you just play ball in there. And the rules are really, relatively simple. The idea is, you hit the ball back and forth. You can't knock it out of the ring. And if it hits you anywhere from your knees down, you're out. And otherwise you can bend over and you can smack it around with your fists, but, if it touches you from your feet to your knees, you're out of the game. And, it's a really cool little game. It's kind of a free for all, and there's usually a lot of kids in there. And they just had a blast playing it. They would have done that all day long if it hadn't started raining and finally gotten too muddy for it. They would have done that forever. That was a cool one. I wish I had had that as a kid. And as my wife pointed out, I also love swimming a lot. I don't know how much swimming is actually an organized sport, but just to be swimming, God, I've been swimming since I was, well, I don't know, since before I could remember. So I've always liked swimming, but I'm going to go with volleyball. That's going to be my one for now. All right. You know what? She should have just gotten on the microphone over here because she's really good this episode. She says, also, hey, not really a sport, but drunk hide and seek is really good too. We did that one year. This was, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 maybe. It was a while back. But we were all out camping. It was a bunch of families all out camping. And all the kids went to bed. And all the adults, we sat around drinking. And after a while, someone said, we should play hide and seek. And so we did. We set up boundaries and rules. And we had a blast. It was so much fun. We had this big, because we were the only ones there. It was like the middle of the week. We'd all gotten the campsites here for a week. And so, yeah, the weekend, the whole place is packed. But in the middle of the weekend, between the weekends, it was just us. There were no other families out on this huge oval of campsites. And so we had the lake to ourselves, and we had this huge open field to ourselves. And so we went out and played hide-and-seek in the dark while drunk. And it was a great time. I mean, I'm not recommending that you go, you know, running around outdoors by a lake in the dark while drunk. But if you do have occasion to do it, you'll probably have a good time. You shouldn't. But you probably enjoy it. So anyway, 39 is, there it is. It's from Talvin. Oh, love the variety of this episode. You guys are great. How long was the longest shift you ever had to work? And it had to be when we were working at Perkins, and it had to be, I would have come in at 5 o'clock, to work like a 5 to 11 or a 5 to 2. But it was usually like 5 to 10 or 5 to 11. But then the night shift comes on and works, you know, 10 o'clock till 3 or 10 o'clock till 6 or whatever it is. But so there had to be at least a couple of times I came in at 5 and worked all the way through until 6 the next morning. So a 13-hour shift, maybe 14 with cleanups and other miscellaneous garbage. I don't think I have ever worked a longer shift than that, at least not that I can remember. So I've worked some pretty long shifts. I've done up to 12 hours at my current job where I've left early in the morning and haven't gotten back until really late. But I don't think ever longer than 13 or 14 hours. So 35. This one is from Kaz. That's 4 for you this week, man. You have been granted super speed. How do you use it to prank Kyle? Well, obviously by pantsing him repeatedly, unexpectedly throughout the day. It is really awesome. I mean, honestly, he's run on by, boom, pants gone. He doesn't know what happened. All he feels is a breeze, and then suddenly his junk's hanging out. That's funny. Everybody has a great laugh at Kyle's expense. 03 comes from Kyle. And Kyle says, what's the last movie soundtrack you listened to? The last movie soundtrack I listened to, actually, weirdly, not another teen movie. So I just, it was, the pop punk cover version of, Melt With You came up on Spotify, and I was like, oh God, that's right. I really like this. And then I realized, oh God, it's from Not Another Teen Movie. And so I pulled up the album and it's like Not Another Teen Movie. The whole movie, all the music is just cover songs, cover versions of 80s songs that I really like. And so therefore, I listened through all of that and I really enjoyed it. I picked up a few of them that I put in my favorites list, but yeah, it's not a bad album. So. 95 is, there it is. Oh, finally our first repeat. Okay, well then we're going to just do one more and then we're going to be done with this. So 68. 68 is, haha, it's from Kyle again. Kyle says, superhero matchup, Groot versus Mr. Fantastic. Assume this is a surprise fight and Reed doesn't have time to prepare or access his gadgets. This is an interesting fight because Groot and Mr. Fantastic are both extremely resilient as superheroes. Like one of their advantages is even when they're not dealing a whole lot of damage, they can take a lot of punishment. Both of them can. Because, you know, Fantastic because he's all stretchy and he pounces back, literally. And Groot, because Groot just seems to take a pounding, and he's okay. I mean, he's a tree, for God's sake. So, you want to match these two up? I'm trying to imagine, because I can see Reed getting in some good shots, but how much is Reed Richards really going to hurt Groot? I mean, maybe, you know, he grabs him, fashions himself into some sort of slingshot and flings Groot, you know, a quarter mile into the air, where he comes crashing down on God knows what, but would that be enough to really do serious damage to Groot? That kind of fall? I don't know. Unless Reed is, you know, has some way to maneuver him into fire, I suppose. But then on the other hand, I mean, yeah, Groot relies on brute strength. How much is brute strength going to do against Mr. Fantastic? What are you going to do, crush him? I mean, he'll just kind of squeeze out of whatever, you know, form you want to put him into. He's going to just squeeze through it and deal with the punishment. And it's not, I think they're going to fight to a draw and then just go out and share a beer together and have a good time. They could both use that. All right. That is the end of the Podomatic. So, I am now going to turn it over to GLaDOS, and she's going to give us a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. And I didn't use any bumper music this week, so don't even worry about it. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, you should subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use and write us a nice review or a crappy review as long as it's got 5 stars on it, because that's what makes the difference. Or if you want to do something super nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends. You're enjoying it, so you need to spread the word. Just one other person this week. One other person. Let them know. Let other people enjoy this podcast as well. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network, which now includes me, the Nerd Pride Radio Podcast, and Bicoastal Disorder, which is awesome. Quality nerd podcasting from quality nerds. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all of that grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on various social medias. But to be completely honest, if you want to get a hold of me, seriously, the best way to do it is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You'll sign up there, you'll send me a message, we'll hang out together, we'll become best friends in the world. We will have fun. And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my forums and to Facebook, and I post up, hey guys, I am recording. Anything you want to say, I will read off at the end of the podcast, which is what I'm doing right now. There's not a whole lot out here because I didn't record for very long. The first one is from my website at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. I posted up, hey guys, there is no meticulously planned portion this week. Give me topics to discuss so I can pretend like this is a real podcast. And my buddy Eliahad says, that guy, you know, the guy at the table that brings down the game, but it's awkward to say anything because of reasons outside the game. So, what about that guy? Or, if you'd rather, talk about social contracts that are required to be in place for games to work properly. Wow. First off, you have to, for social contracts, the base one is just assume that everyone is there mostly to play a game and that they all agree to play by the rules and we all agree that we're not going to cheat each other and we trust each other not to cheat. And if you don't have those basics down, then yeah, it's going to be a rough time. I mean, there's more that can go into it, but that's the basics of it. In my mind, I'm thinking that, you know, maybe we should all agree that we're there for the same purpose, which would be nice if we're all there for the same purpose, but we're not going to be. Some people really like the strategy of it. Some people really like just socializing. Some people don't care who wins or loses. They just like seeing the action play out. They enjoy experimenting with stuff, whereas others, you know, winning and losing is everything for them. And you can mix up those kinds of people and have them all in the same game, and it's still cool. It's nicer when everyone's of similar mindsets, because, you know, then when you've got good friends who are very competitive and, you know, we can get into this and it's all in good fun, but you can do some playful trash talk and that kind of stuff. You know, that can be really fun for certain people. Whereas other people, they don't get the trash talk as playful. For them, it's just either annoying or hurtful but mostly, again, we're all there to play a game. Let's all agree that we're going to follow the rules, that we're actually going to pay attention, be here when it's our turn, that kind of thing. And we all agree that we're not cheating, and let's just have a good time. That guy is really, really difficult. And it depends on exactly who that guy is. When, you know, really, the game is really less fun because of that person, but it's really hard to say something about it. Because either he's a great friend, he's a good friend in every other circumstance except this one. If he's a good friend, shouldn't you be able to talk to him? I mean, that's easy to say here. I don't know. There are times when you are forced to game with people, whether it's a board game or a role-playing game or whatever. You're forced to game with people who you would prefer not to, that you really wish that maybe you could have someone else in their spot, or maybe they're just, you know, it's too much of a crowd. Maybe you'd just rather they weren't there at all. We've all been there. Most of the time, you just grin and bear it, and you make the most of it. You compensate for whatever their flaw is in your eyes. Their flaw is that's mucking up your game. And then maybe find a way to not invite them next time. But boy, that's a hard one. That is a really hard one. I've been really fortunate with most of the gaming experiences I've had. But yeah, that's a really tough one. All right, and then that's it for my forums. So let's go on out to Facebook. And I think there's a couple of responses out on Facebook. And yes, in fact, there's exactly a couple. So the first one is from Iantha. First off, my question was, hold on, here it is. It says, now recording episode 249, ask anything, but also talk about your favorite thing that you were forced to read in school. All right. So Iantha says, I was forced to read the Iliad and the Odyssey and absolutely loved it. I had already gotten into fantasy through Lord of the Rings and Dragonlance, and was right around the time that I was diving into the origins of my name and reading a lot of mythology. So, cool. I'm trying to think of, I asked this question, and then I'm trying to remember, you know what, I think for me, the Canterbury Tales was one of the first ones. I found it fascinating because of the structure of it, this, you know, compilation of short stories, and the depth of the tales for as old as they were, plus, at the time, we also accompanied the Canterbury Tales with some study of Old English, and I was just fascinated by the evolution of the language and the similarities, like the parts where you could vaguely recognize some English in there, because I was also studying German at the time, so you could recognize the German in it as well, but how very, very different it was from modern English, which just blew my mind. I was in ninth grade. I thought that was just amazing, so I really enjoyed the Canterbury Tales for that reason. But Anthony goes on and says, also, when does everyone here typically decorate for Christmas? I've been seeing a lot of shaming online for decorating too early, and my parents wait until Christmas Eve to decorate because they keep their tree and everything up until at least a couple days past Epiphany. However, I grew up with Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas, and I love the blurring of the fall-winter holidays into one large light candle gift fun season. Plus, my daughter and I tend to struggle with seasonal depression, so it's never a bad thing to brighten up things a little at the house and add some decorations. What say you all? I don't know about anybody else. The tradition is Christmas decorations go up the weekend after Thanksgiving for a lot of people. Okay, that's great. And then they come down, you know, somewhere around the week of New Year's before school starts back up again. That's the traditional cycle of it. Personally, I don't much care one way or another. We've had stores here in town who had Christmas decorations up starting just before or just after Halloween. It's just what's going to happen. And while it's weird to see Christmas decorations that early. I don't mind. Like you say, your idea of the whole fall winter season is just one constant stream of decoration that moves from one holiday into the next. I'm totally cool with that. I personally am way too lazy to do that much decorating myself. I'm not putting up a whole lot of stuff and certainly not changing it out with every holiday. But if other people want to, okay, go for it. Especially if, as you say, it's a mood brightener and it helps you through, the dark days of winter, then okay, go for it. I got no complaints there at all. So, like I say, other people can pitch in, because yes, I know, I'm with you. I've heard a ton of people complaining. It seems like it's a standard complaint every year to complain about how early the stores are getting stuff out there. And again, for me, yeah, I can agree. I don't like seeing Christmas before we've gotten to, Halloween and Thanksgiving, but I don't mind seeing the lights and the decorations and everything go up. Although, God, we were just driving, I mean, within this last week, we were driving through town here and it's like, wow, I would have thought those ghosts would be gone by now. There's a tree that is just ringed with like six little ghosts holding hands. And, here we are, the weekend of Thanksgiving, and there's still some ghosts running around that tree. And just interesting because, you know, you think of people who leave their Christmas decorations up way too long or whatever. I have not seen the Halloween ones. And then right after I say it, we drive like two blocks further down and across the street from the mortuary, there's a house with a huge coffin on the front lawn, and not like because it's from the mortuary. It just happens to be a coffin that they had out for their Halloween display. And it's this open coffin laying in the middle of their lawn. I'm not sure. Sure. It could have been. I mean, it is right across the street. I assumed that the people who run the mortuary lived upstairs in the mortuary. Okay. So, because, you know, maybe if this was their house across the street and they were just keeping the overstock out there. I mean, it's cold weather. Nothing's going to go bad, right? So, but just odd. So, yeah, it does, it kind of blurs. All right. That was Iantha. And the next one is from Akiva. And Akiva says, in high school, it was The Great Gatsby. In college, The Brothers Karamazov. And in grad school, probably Beyond Good and Evil. He says, I reread that one recently, and it's still fascinating and profound. See, oh, that's cool. That is a great answer. The thing that prompted me to ask this question in the first place, I just remembered, is my son Elijah, who is 15, just wrote an essay about Romeo and Juliet, which I remember doing Romeo and Juliet in ninth grade. And he did a really good essay. It was really well. The essay is, you had to take a stand. Are Romeo and Juliet responsible for their own actions? Are they responsible for their own deaths? And his argument was that no, not entirely, because, they're teenagers. They're just kids, and they clearly do not have good role models. They had parents who cared more about their feud than about their own children. They had the nurse and the priest who were these parental figures guiding them and, giving them terrible advice. And, you know, he had scientific evidence to back it up about, you know, how teenage brains are structured and the impetuous nature and the lack of judgment, that is just inherent to the way they're bred. Anyway, it's a really good essay, but the point was, he really liked Romeo and Juliet. He just really enjoyed reading it. And I remember doing Romeo and Juliet in ninth grade, and it was all right, but I didn't think a whole lot of it. I liked Macbeth a lot better at that time. But for him, it was like, he got it. They did it. They actually wound up reading it in graphic novel form, but using all of the original text from the play. So it wasn't like a modernized version or it wasn't an abridged version. It was the original text of Shakespeare's play, but done in graphic novel format. And he loved it. He found it very accessible, and he really enjoyed doing that. And so, you know, I was just inspired because it was something that I'm sure beforehand he had absolutely no interest in Romeo and Juliet, no reason that he wanted to get involved in it. But afterwards he just, he saw the nuance of it and he was very impressed. It was very cool. And so because of that, I suggested that he and I should watch Shakespeare in Love because it's one of my favorite movies, and it is based on Romeo and Juliet, or it surrounds Romeo and Juliet, as it were. And so we did. We watched it together, and he had a blast. He really enjoyed it. So made me feel good. That was cool. And also, the other one is, since they're still working on for the 1X season, their play is Medea. And we had... I talked about this just a little bit last week, and I got some feedback from Sarah Beth, who said that Medea was a play that was really important to her, and she didn't offer any more context than that. But it got me thinking about Medea and the feminism in it, or lack of feminism in it. And I have been researching the play Medea all week, just off and on, just kind of reading articles here and there about it. And I found some really fascinating stuff, and I'm actually developing that. I think I'm going to do it as a segment next week and do the whole talk because, I could do it right now, but I wouldn't do it justice. So, look forward to a talk about the play Medea and the cleverness of Euripides in putting this play together. I think what he did was genius for his day. It was a very clever, way of doing this. But anyway, that's just a tease for next week because, I've been pausing about every 30 seconds so I can cough because it's just finally getting to be too much for me. So this is a great place to wrap it up. You guys have been awesome. Thank you for being so patient with me. I will come back next week and we'll talk about Euripides and more, and we'll have a good time. So I love you guys. Take care. We'll see you next week.